What is going on, everybody? Thank you for tuning in to the long-awaited next episode of Ant and Biggerhead versus the World. That is right, I'm back. It has been a long time, and I'm here with your favorite co-host, Average Ant.
Yeah, I'm still here, still going by Average Ant. It's good to be back, I guess. That's really all I have to say.
Yeah, it is very good to be back. As Ant mentioned, in the last solo episode, I believe he did. I was playing some ball down in Palm Springs, California, beautiful weather. Just trying to get my arm healthy before I, transfer my four-year to play next year. And Ant, he's definitely hitting me up to try and get these episodes done, but unfortunately, internet connection is not great at the Marquee Villa. I do recommend it. It's a great, great place to stay, but internet, you're pretty much on your hotspot the whole time, so I was unable to get an episode, but I'm super happy to be back here and doing a show now, and I guess I'll let Ant take over and tell you what we're going to get into today.
Yeah, so today we kind of just have an icebreaker episode just to kind of get back into it, and what other icebreaker to pull out than covering one of the co-host's favorite teams. It's the Rockets, of course. We're just covering the Rockets this episode, so you could take a wild guess on whose team that is. But yeah, we're just going to be covering the couple moves that they've made and kind of what we think about them and what we see the Rockets doing from here on, pretty much.
Yeah, and so like Ant said, it's his favorite team, the Houston Rockets. Oh, I'm just kidding. It's definitely my favorite team. I'll tell you what, I rocked my Clint Capella jersey down in Palm Springs. Had a few Houston boys on my team. Shout out David, Jonathan. I think maybe Jack, I'm not sure. I don't know. I had some Houston boys on the squad. It was fun. Rocked my Clint Capella jersey around. I kept telling people I had to wear it before he got traded. And here we are. The Rockets have made some big moves, and Clint Capella is still on the roster, so I think I might have lucked out. I think I get to keep wearing his jersey. Obviously never rule anything out with Daryl Morey, but just as long as they don't do something stupid like get Kevin Love, I think we're in pretty good shape. But in the long run, we're going to talk about all the several few moves that they made, the big, the small, our favorites, our least favorites, and then, like Ant said, kind of where we want to go from there, where they might go from there. And so, I guess, without further ado, Ant, I'll kind of let you take over. What's, your favorite move for my Rockets team in this offseason?
Yeah, so, I guess, as you know, we kind of discussed it. There wasn't much to choose from. Obviously, the big Russell Westbrook trade, that's something we'll dissect a little bit later. So, that was kind of off limits for this whole segment. So, I kind of teeter-totted back and forth on this and ended up going with the Rockets signing Daniel House for 3 years, 11 mil. There's a number of reasons why I like this. I don't really think there's anything that I dislike about it, honestly. I mean, he's a dog. He's a dude that shot 46.8% from the field, 41.6% from three, which was shocking to me when I was looking up the stats. I mean, I knew he was a good shooter, but I didn't know he was putting up those numbers, especially on 4.6 attempts in about 25 minutes a game. That's really good. If you don't know anything about three-point shooting, those are some pretty good numbers right there. And another reason why Daniel House is a great re-sign for the Houston Rockets is his defense. He's not a guy that's going to go out there and clamp Kawhi or LeBron or KD, but nobody can. So the best you could do in that situation is just kind of slow him down and whatnot, get him tired out towards the end of the game. That's something that Daniel House can do and is very capable of. And the biggest reason why Daniel House, this signing, was kind of separated to me from Austin Rivers and Gerald Green and whatnot is because he's 6'7". The Rockets are a really short team running P.J. Tucker at the four. He's only like 6'4". So this is a huge re-sign. I thought it was kind of underrated, honestly, thinking about the whole NBA as in context. Daniel House was really valuable to the Rockets last season. So he's the ideal role player in a system that the Rockets have been running the last couple years under Mike D'Antoni. So it's just a great re-sign in general. I don't have really any negatives about it.
I mean, yeah, absolutely. Like you said, I mean, it was kind of a no-brainer. We joked about it before the episode. I had two down for my favorite signings. One of them was Daniel House, and I made another one pretty much because I knew you were going to pick him. I mean, we hyped him up big time in our playoff segment, you know, our playoff adjustment segment. But you're right. His numbers are absolutely staggering. When you think about it, 4.6 attempts per game from three, hitting 41.6%. That's ridiculous, especially for that to go as unnoticed as I think a lot of people did. Daniel House was in the starting lineup for quite a few games during their kind of injury-riddled period where the Rockets were playing, you know, the 10th, 11th man off the bench. But he came in and balled out, put up 9.3 points, played good defense. He's big 6'7", about one of the only wings with legitimate size on their team. You mentioned P.J. Tucker not being that big, and he's expected to start at the 4. So, I mean, it's definitely important for them to bring on as much wing size as they can. And on top of that, I think that Daniel House at 26 years old has a lot of room to still improve. I mean, last year was his rookie year in the NBA. And 26 years old is not, I guess, spry by any means. It's not a part of the youth movement. But still, that's an evolving player, a dude that comes in and fits their scheme perfectly. He profiles as a potential 3-and-D wing, especially with that 40-plus percent shot. I mean, if he can hold that up and then maybe be able to handle the pressure a little bit better of perhaps the playoffs, Daniel House could be a legit signing for this Rockets team that's not very much money. 3 years, $11.1 million. And it's really one of the only young players that you feel like could actually be part of a core 4 or 5 years from now, considering the rest of Houston's roster is late 20s to early 30s, which is no mark on anything. It's just Daniel House is a young guy the Rockets brought up and actually brought back. So I think that's pretty exciting. But I guess moving on from your favorite move to my default favorite move, since you took my guy House, but it's all good.
Like you mentioned, this is we both kind of actually had both, like, prepared in a way, because I guess I'll let you drop the bombshell on it, but I also had some work going on for this guy as well.
Yeah, so like Ian mentioned, we had our 1A and our 1B and just fell on to who goes first to pick each one. But so my favorite move of the offseason, you know, quite frankly, is re-signing Austin Rivers. Austin Rivers, I think he was kind of the unsung hero of the Houston guard rotation last year. I think he did an excellent job facilitating when Harden was off, when Chris Paul was hurt. Given the Rockets valuable minutes throughout the season, which can, with this year, will be able to take pressure off, or at least, at the very least, some minutes off of Eric Gordon, Russell Westbrook, and James Harden, as in terms of playmaking, facilitating, and shot making. So Austin Rivers shot about 33% from the field from three in the regular season, which is okay. I mean, it's respectable. It's not what you want out of a guard by any means. But he bumped all the way up to 46% from three in the playoffs on 3.5 attempts. And if any of you watched the Rockets as closely as I did during the playoffs, which you probably didn't, Austin Rivers was pretty much knocking down threes every time he took a shot. I mean, it was pretty surprising to me. But Austin Rivers' jumper was legit. He loves it in Houston. They love him in Houston. He's a solid defender and an excellent depth piece. And for the Rockets to be able to bring him back on a 2-year veteran minimum, to me, that's a steal considering the season, like kind of the resurgent season that Austin Rivers had helping out the Rockets. He easily could have gotten more money somewhere else. And so I guess just from a fit standpoint, from both the Rockets and Austin Rivers, Houston was the place for him to be, and they were able to bring him back on that 2-year veteran minimum, which is pretty much the reason, only reason why I would rank this any higher than Daniel House, just because you were able to get a legitimate veteran addition and depth for the minimum out of a guy that I definitely believe could have made more money elsewhere.
Yeah, I mean, Austin Rivers definitely could have made more money going elsewhere, but like you said, a lot of the reasons why I had Austin Rivers as the 1A, 1B, whatever, is he is very unnoticed and unsung in Houston. You might look at his, like, 41. I believe he was shooting, like, 41, 42% from the field last year, around 31, 33% from three. I mean, you may look at that and think that's not very good. It's not, in a way. But if you've watched him, if you watch him throughout the season, I mean, there's definitely times where he is the guy that has swung the momentum, swung the pendulum in the game. I mean, more so in the playoffs, specifically in the Warriors series. I think it was game six, the one that they lost, got eliminated. Yeah, they lost, but if you watched Austin Rivers, the way he played that game, there were times where I think when James Harden went out and the Warriors had the super team in, and it looked like, or I guess minus KD, but they had their core in, and they were just making shot after shot. But Austin Rivers is orchestrating offense, getting dudes open looks, hitting open looks, and kept them in the game while James Harden was getting some rest on the bench. So, I mean, he's not a guy that's he's obviously not going to carry you for an extended period of time, but he is a guy that can fill in those gaps from time to time and take over playmaking on a team who really doesn't really have any playmakers besides James Harden and now Russell Westbrook, previously Chris Paul. So, I mean, it's a huge addition. You always need some sort of playmaker coming off the bench, and to get a guy on a two-year vet min who could have easily got 2 years, or he could have easily got at the very least a contract similar to Daniel House elsewhere. I believe he probably could have went and got around 10 mil a year on a team like...
I would 100% agree.
Yeah, on a team like the Wizards or something. I mean, I know the Wizards probably don't have any money, but using them as an example of franchise of that caliber, he definitely could have got around 10 mil a year. So, I mean, it's huge. Keeping him on the books, getting him on the books, I mean, it's... just overall a great signing. The only negative I would say, if I had any negatives, would be his shooting splits. But I mean,
he's a streaky shooter.
Yeah, very streaky. But you take it, hoping that he could get hot at the right times.
You absolutely do, especially when he performs well in the playoffs last year. And at the very worst, or very least, you got a really good heart and hustle guy. I mean, having veterans like that glue guys off the bench. I mean, it's a calming presence, whether or not he goes in there and knocks down shots or not. And the continuity, I think, actually is another huge piece for this Rockets team that lost a ton of role players last year. It's something I guess we'll probably get a little bit more into later on, but you saw kind of last offseason where the Rockets let everyone go, basically. Let Ariza go, let Mbamute Mute go, and they brought in James Ennis and Michael Carter-Williams and all these bad fits because they were cheaper, whatever, this and that. You saw the Rockets this year. Whereas, I'm not going to lie to you, I was a little bit of a whoop-de-doo, like, we're bringing back our own guys. But at the same time, you're bringing back your own guys. You're bringing back Daniel House. You're bringing back Austin Rivers. Like, these guys that played 20-plus minutes a game for you throughout most of your regular season, and that's a level of continuity and chemistry that, yeah, despite bringing in a whole new guard, Russell Westbrook, he's going to benefit from that. He's going to see the chemistry that this roster already has. And so, yeah, like I said, before we get any too much deeper into that, we'll move on from our favorite moves to our least favorite moves. Speaking of the whoop-de-doo attitude, Ant, I will let you take this one away.
Yeah, definitely whoop-de-doo here. Least favorite move isn't a move, it's the lack of making moves, really. I get the Rockets were kind of held against the will of CP3 and James Harden's contracts, and I guess you could throw Clint Capella's contract in there as well, so they're kind of had their hands tied on what they can do. But they had enough money to make a couple more moves and boost up their rosters in ways like getting guys with length that they desperately, desperately need. Something that, I mean, you were huge on getting Dwayne Dedman, which I thought would have been a great signing for the Rockets. Thankfully, he came to the Kings. So
I'm only not mad because it's the Kings.
That's honestly the only reason why I'm not mad at the Rockets is because he signed with the Kings. But I mean, not even like specifically Dwayne Dedman, but you could have got a guy
either length and shooting
that could defend, shoot,
Jamichael Green
that you can run on switches. Yeah, exactly. So that's just really why. That's the only negative, like the only negative, I guess I'd say, with the offseason thus far is that they haven't done anything really besides retain guys that they desperately needed to retain.
Yeah, and I 100%. I couldn't agree more. My least favorite is along similar lines. I'll get to that in just a second. But I mean, I You're completely right. The Rockets sat there, didn't make a lot of moves. I mean, obviously, like you said, held hostage by the Chris Paul and James Harden contracts. Somehow they were able to move Chris Paul and make that big splash. But at the same time, the Rockets sat there with a mid-level exception and not a ton, but a little bit of money to throw around in free agency. And they kind of elected to re-sign their own guys and hold out hope for a Jimmy Butler trade, I think, to be perfectly honest. Whereas there was a lot of other, you know, decent guys I feel like they could have brought in. Again, it's tough to be mad at because, like I just mentioned, they are bringing back their same guys and, you know, keeping some continuity. But at the same time, this is a Rockets roster that lost even further, like earlier in the playoffs than the year before. So it's, you know, when you're sitting there, obviously this is all before the Russell Westbrook trade for me, but I'm sitting there kind of like, oh, great, we re-signed the roster that lost in the divisional round. Or, you're like, awesome. Like, or the... So, I mean, it's... For me, in the conference semifinals, I guess. Not divisional round.
We'll just call it second round.
That's football.
that's baseball. Football. Yeah, baseball, football, whatever.
Baseball. but, yeah, so I was a little undersold on it. But either way, it seems to be working out now. And so, I mean, like Ant said... We kind of got to get a little nitpicky on the least favorite moves because it really actually looks like a pretty good overall offseason for the Rockets at this point. But with that same kind of theme in mind of not, you know, getting size, my least favorite move of the offseason thus far is going to be letting Kenneth Faried walk. I mean, the Rockets did such a fantastic job of bringing back Gerald Green, Daniel House, and Austin Rivers. You'd think that the Kenneth Faried matchmaking or match was, you know, it was perfect. Kenneth Faried came in, revitalized his career, had 12 double doubles, averaged 13 points and 8 boards, 3 of them offensive, and actually shot 35% from 3 on 1.1 attempts. Resurgent numbers for the Manimal, a guy that had kind of been washed out of the league for the last couple of years. I mean, eventually being bought out by the Nets, I believe, last year before the Rockets signed him. Yeah, I mean, you think, why not? That seems like a match made in heaven, basically, is the Rockets need more size, they need more length, they need to bring it back. Why not re-sign Kenneth Faried? I mean, to me, I understand why it may not happen. Kenneth Faried played really, really well, and just like how Austin Rivers might want to go make, could have gone and made more money, Kenneth Faried can probably go and make more money somewhere else if someone's willing to take a chance on him. It hasn't happened yet. He's still out there. But as of right now, the Rockets need size. The only big bodies on their team are Clint Capella and Tyson Chandler. And then I think next closest is, I guess besides youthful guys that will never see the court in playoff time, is Daniel House at 6'7". So having Faried's size, I think, could be pretty huge, at least in the regular season. I mean, the rotations are always going to shrink and go to your best players in the playoffs, but having Kenneth Faried in the regular season was huge for the Rockets last year. I mean, their record after signing him was markedly improved. I mean, granted, Harden was doing Harden things, but Kenneth Faried was a big part last year, and so my least favorite move of the offseason is not bringing him back while sitting there and bringing everyone else back. Not that I'm mad about everyone else, but nitpicking.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, something that I guess you kind of glanced over a little bit is that Kenneth Faried adds rebounding to a team that doesn't really have much rebounders. Like, Clint Capella is a glass cleaner for sure, but other than that, I guess you have Russell Westbrook. But I mean, we all know kind of the story behind his rebounds a little bit. James Harden is
what
in a
story? I'm never
situation.
Talking about him badly again.
Yeah, but like him and James Harden get their rebounds in a very similar way. So there's only one real true rebounder, or I guess now that they signed Tyson Chandler, there's two true rebounders. But you need more than that to have a championship contending team, and the signing of Tyson Chandler kind of just replaces Kenneth Faried with a non-shooter. The biggest thing that Kenneth Faried added to his game is shooting. I mean, he's not going to go out there and be a lights-out shooter, but he's a capable shooter, and that's what you need at a four option rotational
five. Yeah, just somebody that can draw defenders. I mean, I'll kind of interject. You mentioned comparison. They brought in Tyson Chandler for like a Faried style. I would almost say that Tyson Chandler fills more of the Nene role that Nene has played in the last few years. And I think if they stagger his minutes like that, he can be greatly effective in the playoffs, just like Nene was. I still think there's room for Fareed on the roster. Obviously, we're still talking. There's still room for size, but I don't think Tyson Chandler even brings the same level of, the same level of production that Kenneth Fareed could to this lineup, being as old as he is in the point of his career. So, yeah, just need to throw that in.
You're right. He doesn't. He definitely does fill the Nene role, and what Nene is a non-shooter. And when you don't bring back Kenneth Fareed, if you don't, that's a really bad look. If you think about who your two most dominant ball handlers, it's Russell Westbrook and James Harden. And what do? They ISO, drive in, or I guess in James Harden's case, step back. But regardless of that, they drive in. If they have an open look at the basket, they take the layup. If they don't, they kick out to a shooter in the corner. And you subtract a shooter, especially at a big man position, that just clogs the paint more for your two ball handler playmakers and all that. So it's just really not a good look if they don't bring back Kenneth Fareed.
I guess further into it, the only way I see it that not being like seriously frowned upon as we get partway into the regular season is if Fareed does sign a big contract somewhere else. And it's not going to be huge, but it could be above the vet minimum, which is what the Rockets are like. They're probably not like the Rockets really can't afford with their contract or with their cap restraints and everything, really can't afford much more than a veteran's minimum. So, I mean, best case scenario, you hope Kenneth Fareed's like, well, I fit here well, I can win a championship and come back. And if not, the Rockets are probably going to be hoping for some buyout situations later on.
Yeah, for sure. And I guess I was a little disrespectful towards Tyson Chandler, but I think his overall effectiveness on the team is definitely going to be held back if the Rockets don't re-sign Kenneth Fareed. It's going to be an exposure moment, I guess, to put it a little bluntly. But I like the signing overall. I mean, you're definitely replacing that Nene role, and in my opinion, Tyson Chandler at this point will give you more than what Nene gave you. But I mean, it's just
especially
gonna be,
defensively.
Yeah, it's just not going to be good if they don't resign Kenneth Fareed or someone similar to what he could bring to the table.
It's really not, and when you think about the size in general in the West currently, the Rockets really only having Capella and then a stagger or light minute Tyson Chandler, it's not going to be enough to cut it when you have to go against AD, when you have to go against Boogie, when you have to go against Rudy Gobert. There's just a lot of size, a lot of hustle boards in the contending teams in the West. And yeah, the Rockets have the makings for probably the best offensive club in the West, kind of like they were Chris Paul's first year. But at the same time, it's not going to matter if they're as bad or worse than they were rebounding last year and then defensively at the same time. But
yeah,
we'll see.
That's definitely, they've just regressed so much on the defensive end and rebounding end since that first season with Chris Paul. But I guess we could kind of transition to definitely the hot topic of the Rockets offseason. So since you are the Rockets fan of the duo, I'll let you introduce this for sure.
So I don't have the exact trade in front of me, but basically Chris Paul and his albatross of a contract was gifted away from the Rockets to the Oklahoma City Thunder, along with, I believe, two first-round picks and then at least two pick swaps, all the way up to 2026. So the Oklahoma City Thunder racked up more first-round picks in their treasure trove. Houston Rockets got rid of Chris Paul's absurd contract, and they brought in Russell Westbrook. You kind of mentioned this almost like slight plus lateral move we were talking about a little before. That's pretty much what it is. You're bringing in a ball dominant point guard to replace your old ball, or you're bringing in a slightly younger ball dominant point guard to replace your old ball dominant point guard. So just in terms of money, getting rid of Chris Paul, biggest win out of this entire deal for the Rockets. Cap space, the Rockets contracts, that just team in general with all the feuds and issues that were going on between Harden and CP3. But on top of that, the Rockets were able to get it done without having to involve a third team, which to me, I think, aside from getting rid of Chris Paul's contract, is absolutely the biggest win of this deal, because involving a third team means sending more assets to someone to take Chris Paul, because Oklahoma City does not want Chris Paul. They did not want him, but the fact of the matter is, at least from everything that I heard and I saw, was Oklahoma City and Russell Westbrook were on pretty good terms of sending him away, and they wanted to send him somewhere where he wanted to go, and Houston seemed to be his favorite by the end of it, and so they did what they needed to do to facilitate that move. It seemed like down at kind of the witching hour that a three-team trade would get involved, and it would probably be Miami. But the Rockets were able to work it out on their own, not have to send even more assets to someone. I guess it could have ended up costing him more assets just to make OKC take him, but at the same time, not having a third team involved makes it less messy, makes the allowed the Rockets to basically maintain everyone with the kind of a straight across Chris Paul for Russell Westbrook. So at first glance, I'm excited. I'm very excited, I think, at the very least, just because there's not going to be as much on-court and off-court drama right away. It could develop. Shoot, it's the NBA. It's the best reality TV show in the world. But, you know, first take, I'm pretty excited, Ant, so I'll let you go on from here.
Yeah, I'd say the biggest positive for me is that James Harden gets a star that he actually wants to play with. Russell Westbrook isn't going to be out here making fun of James Harden's man boobs or anything like that. They're actually friends. They've been friends, obviously, since the OKC days.
They've known each other since they were kids.
Yeah, exactly. So it's just a good situation overall. I mean, I don't know about you, but from personal experience, when you actually have a friendship, like a deep friendship and bond with someone that you play sports with, you definitely want to do all you can to win with them. So I mean, that's my biggest positive from this, aside from obviously getting rid of CP3's contract. Like you said, it is a lateral plus move. You are getting, I'm not saying that Russ is necessarily declining, but he is on the downswing of his peak for sure, but he does have another few years left in his prime. For a guy that relies a lot on his athleticism, they tend to kind of decay a little more rapidly, besides LeBron, I guess, but he's from another planet, so I guess that's why LeBron does that. But anyway, Russ, with at his absolute like athletic thing, he's past that, but he still has a good couple years left in his prime, so that's good. Obviously, I mean, CP3 is clearly as much as I hate to say it, looks like he's on his way out. I mean, I've been a CP3 fan for a while. I guess this whole kind of Rocket situation left a whole little salty taste in my mouth about him, but I'm hoping for the best for him, but he's on the downswing, so this is definitely an upgrade for the Rockets for sure. And like you, I mean, I'm super excited to see how this works out, and that's something we'll get into, I guess, coming up shortly, about how it's all going to work out. But I mean, I'm excited. It's either going to go really good or there's going to be a ton of drama involved. So it's not my team, so I wouldn't mind if there's drama in it.
I obviously would. I'm hoping it works out. But I mean, for some numbers and stuff that we're going to get to in a second, I am modestly confident that it will work out. I mean, it is two of the most historically high usage players of all time joining forces. But we'll get into the numbers a little more in a second. So there are some reasons I'm optimistic. One thing I just kind of wanted to touch on is that you mentioned, you know, that strong bond and playing with, you know, friends, lifelong friends, whatever it is. I think sometimes we look at professional sports as being a little bit beyond that kind of intangible, you know, like feeling and emotion. When you're a kid and you're playing, you're playing football, playing baseball, whatever, you have certain teams and certain moments where you're with people and you're almost on another level. You're playing well beyond what you originally viewed as your skill level. You're beating teams and you just keep winning and winning and winning. But it's kind of because you're like playing for each other and all this. And it has to do with those relationships and those bonds. And I think sometimes we kind of, as just fans of the sports, look at these professional levels like, okay, yeah, well, you know, the team spirit and the camaraderie and all this, that's great until you get to the highest level of talent. And then talent kind of trumps all. That's, I think, what we kind of view as talent trumps all, which to an extent is true. I mean, no amount of heart is going to make Isaiah Thomas score consistently on Kawhi Leonard. And it's just not going to happen. But at the same time, if you look at teams that band together and play well together and kind of do it for each other, they can come up with, like, you know, with miracle plays and things like that. I mean, while it may not always be a championship extension and always lead to a championship, you see teams like the Utah Jazz last year rallying around and beating this that Thunder team that was a higher seed. And just, like, having moments that are beyond their expected level of play that can elevate them. And so you're 100% right. Russell Westbrook and James Harden being best friends, or maybe not best friends, but being really good friends and lifelong friends, they're going to want to work this out for even deeper reasons than what Chris Paul and James Harden wanted to work it out for. James Harden and Chris Paul wanted to play together because they were both elite and they thought they could win a championship. And they wanted to do well so they could win a championship. Russ and James Harden obviously both want to win a championship, but I'm sure they've played a ton of pickup together. They've played together. I mean, they played together in OKC for 3 years, and growing friendships on top of that desire to win a championship, both these guys put in the work. And so in terms of that, you have to be slightly more optimistic that this is going to work out better than the Harden and whole Chris Paul, I guess. It's really tough to, it's funny to look back on, because, I mean, after the first year, the Chris Paul James Harden experiment was viewed as just a resounding success. If Chris Paul stayed healthy, they were going to win the title, like this, that, and whatever. And then Chris Paul basically dealt with like the same amount of health issues, but the Rockets' depth was less. James Harden had to do everything. And then all of a sudden it came back to those two just Spider-Man pointing in the locker room. Like, I'm the best ISO player. No, I'm James Harden. I shoot the ball all the time. Either way, I'm excited. I will let Ant get into his first few kind of number picks and how I guess Ant, we kind of got to dive into this. It's the Russell Westbrook, James Harden experiment. How are these two going to work out playing together? Are we expecting really, really good things? Are we just kind of hoping they coexist and Russ and them stagger minutes 20 apiece? Or do you think that, unlike James Harden and Chris Paul, these two can actually be effective on the court together?
I don't know. to be honest with you, I guess just kind of backtracking a little bit, something that that gives me hope in this is thinking about like LeBron and D-Wade in Miami, how it's kind of bigger than basketball, the way their kind of relationship took over and affected the team. I think. So say like James Harden and Chris Paul were in that situation, like they were the two alphas, they're the two best players in the NBA at the time, which LeBron and Dwayne Wade were in 2011. I mean, I guess Dwayne Wade was probably not the second best, but he was top five for sure. And Dwayne Wade, if it's not LeBron, if it's not his one of his best friends, do you think he says, "Here, you take control of the team that I've had since I got drafted, I won a championship here already"? Do you think that Dwayne doesn't do that if it's not LeBron, if it's not one of his best
friends? No, he does. I mean, if they're not best friends, he probably doesn't recruit LeBron there. Like, I mean, that's just simple facts.
That's another
facts there. But I mean, you're 100%. I mean, any player that has not just stepped back and let LeBron do LeBron things has negatively affected their career for the most part. So, I mean, in hindsight, you know, we're looking back like, yeah, obviously. But at the time, you're absolutely right. Dwayne Wade was elite. LeBron James was the undisputed best player in basketball. And absolute alpha, both absolute alphas. So, I mean, I do 100% agree. I mean, if not for probably a stronger friendship bond, that team doesn't happen. But more importantly, their fit doesn't work out.
Yeah, exactly. And that's something that I could definitely, I guess I'm not going to say definitely see, but that's exactly what I'm hoping for in this Russell Westbrook, James Harden situation, is that Russell Westbrook kind of learns from last season and how OKC was definitely more successful throughout the regular season when Paul George was at the helm He's having an MVP type season for a good chunk of the season, and he let him. It was his team, and we saw how much more successful they were. Yeah, they kind of obviously fizzled out due to a few injuries and whatnot. But I hope Russell Westbrook looks at that and is like, "All right, I'm coming to Houston. This is James Harden's team. He's won an MVP here. He's taken them to the conference finals, and this is his team. I'm just gonna take a back seat. I'm gonna be the D-Wade to his LeBron, and I'm gonna do what I can to adjust my game around James Harden and what the Rockets need me to do." And that's really what I'm hoping for this situation. I mean, James Harden's obviously gonna have to do some adjusting, but a lot of the adjusting does fall on the shoulders of Russell Westbrook here.
100%. I mean, I do really like this Dwayne Wade comparison. I can't remember. I was watching some YouTube video of ESPN or whatever, and someone was mentioned that Russell Westbrook should just go watch all of D Wade's tape with LeBron, and just go research it, call D Wade up, ask him how to play with LeBron, like, and be that off-ball guy. And so I 100% agree. I really hope that he does that. That does happen. The simple fact of the matter is James Harden has shown in the last 2 years that he is refuses to play like off the ball because he is so good with the ball or whatever. Whatever it is, whether it's ego or it's definitely not inability, because he used to be one of the most nasty off ball players in the game back when he was on OKC and even his first few years in the Rockets system. But regardless, whatever reason, the last few years, James Harden has shown the absolute refusal to play off the ball, to move off the ball last year in any capacity. And so with that in mind, like you said, Russ took a step back last year to let Paul George be his team. That's fantastic, because that is really that's the optimistic piece. That's the one thing that I need to see, that Russell Westbrook can again take that step back and let James Harden take over. And while last year James Harden's usage percentage was 40.5%, Chris Paul was hurt for most of it. Even when Chris Paul came back, James Harden was pretty much like, screw you, this is my team, like, you haven't even been here, we barely played well together anyway. I honestly want to see how many field goals Chris Paul and James Harden assisted to each other, because I bet you it wasn't all that many.
Yeah, the only time they passed to each other is like, all right, James, here, you go ISO, you go get a bucket.
Yeah.
All right, Chris, here, you go ISO, you get a bucket.
Exactly. And so from all standpoints of the game, yes, Russell Westbrook is a point guard. Yes, Russell Westbrook has high usage percentages. Russell Westbrook's usage percentage last year was 30%, which was, it's still high, but it's significantly lower than the 41% he had during his MVP campaign, the 36% he had in his first year with Paul George. And you look at that, and Russell Westbrook went down to 30% usage percentage, still high, but he let Paul George be the alpha. Alpha Paul George put up an MVP and, you know, an MVP season in any other league where it's not Giannis and James Harden pretending to be Michael Jordan, you know what I'm saying? Like, in any other season, Paul George wins MVP with his elite defense and offense, but Russell Westbrook took that step back. Now, while his shooting numbers are garbage, that's the biggest question mark about this whole thing, is how bad Russell Westbrook's shooting numbers are. And so on paper, the fit of Chris Paul seems way better, but like we talked about a little bit before, on paper or not, the actual on-court fit of James Harden and Chris Paul was terrible. Those two literally, whenever they were on the court, like you said, it's one of them maybe passing to the other on the break to start the ISO, but other than that, they just stand in the corner. It was one of the most infuriating things to watch in the playoffs, after the Warriors would, you know, each player would cover half a mile on their offensive possession and get a wide open look, and there's Chris Paul dribbling it up and James Harden standing in the corner just kind of hanging out, or vice versa, you know. And then, I mean, obviously it works out when Harden hits a step back three or Chris Paul hits a fading mid-range, because that's about all he shot well in the playoffs, 27% from three. It was just insanely frustrating, because you know if they move at all, they're going to get way more open looks. It's what Chris Paul was, you know, complaining about mostly to D'Antoni, is Harden just standing there. So my thing is, James Harden probably not going to really ever go back to being a cutter or a spot-up guy. That's fine. I think that Russell Westbrook has not only taken that kind of backseat and accepted a backseat role, which, like you said, and we both hope, he takes it into Houston in that kind of D-Wade type role, but I think he'll be more willing to do it than Chris Paul. Chris Paul clearly wasn't willing to do it. Chris Paul's traditional point guard. Chris Paul wants the ball. Chris Paul feels like if he's has the ball, the offense should be moving, this and that, you know, whether he admitted it or not, pretending he loved all this ISO offense the first year. Russell Westbrook, I think, can be a better on-court fit because I think he'll be more willing to cut to the basket, and I think a pairing with Russell Westbrook actually cutting, Russell Westbrook, I think, could be a lethal cutter, as well as an improved shooter. So like I originally said at the beginning of this long, rambly point, Russell Westbrook's shooting is his biggest concern. Here's the reasons why I might be okay with it and why I actually have some confidence in the fact that he will improve his shooting with this offensive system around him and offensive pieces. 72% of Russell Westbrook's shots were two-pointers. He shot 65% on his shots from 0 to 3 feet, Houston's second favorite shot besides the 3. Shot 20% and 33% on shots from 3 to 10 feet and 10 to 16 feet, shots that Houston avoids like the plague. So you cut both of those out, Russell Westbrook's overall field goal percentage could improve, especially being able to cut and kick to even more shooters than he ever had in OKC. On top of that, so cutting out that mid-range should improve his shooting numbers overall. If he actually starts to hit some, defenders are going to sag off him on the driving kicks. They're going to magnetate to Harden. Russell Westbrook's a 37% shooter from the corner last year, and 61% of his three-point makes last year were assisted. Both numbers telling me that a driving kick to Russ in the corner could be effective. Driving kicks to Russ really anywhere could be effective, considering 61% of his three-point shots were assisted last year, meaning he's not like Harden, who only 16% of his three-point shots were assisted. It means that most of Russ's actual three-point makes, whether his attempts or not, were the shots that he made, which should tell Russ that he should be very welcoming to a spot-up shooting kind of role, whether or not he's ever going to be, you know, a 34%, 35% shooter, which I think would make this offense insane. But if he can get, you know, even if he just hits the open ones, his shooting should improve in this system, and I believe it will. And on top of that, I think that a lot of people were really anti-Westbrook, and anti-Westbrook is ball dominant. He's not going to be able to play off the ball. There are a lot of aspects to Russell Westbrook's game to where if he's willing to do it, he can actually be a really good off-ball player like Dwayne Wade.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of this gel-wise comes down to Mike D'Antoni. I'm not saying he needs to reinvent the wheel of his offensive system, but he definitely needs to remix it a little bit. A guy like Russell Westbrook isn't going to want to go chill in the corner while he watches James Harden dribble 25 times. Mm-mm. Like, he's not going to want to do that. No matter how much he loves James Harden, he's not going to want to do that. And vice versa, James Harden isn't going to want to watch Russell Westbrook dribble up, pull up, and take a mid-range two. So a lot of this does fall on Mike D'Antoni. I think in a more constructed offense, both James Harden and Russell Westbrook would be a lot more willing to play off-ball, because it's hard to play off-ball when your coach is just like, all right, here, you take the ball, you go dribble around, dribble down the clock to 4 seconds, and then take a step back three while everybody else just stands around. That's not going to motivate guys to play off-ball. What's going to motivate guys to play off-ball is you get an off-ball screen from James Harden, Russell Westbrook gets a pick-and-roll with Clint Capella, and he either has the option to dump to Capella, he has an open lane, or he has an open James Harden to pass to. That's what's going to want to get these guys to play off-ball offense. So that comes down to Mike D'Antoni. I mean, I definitely think if that's instituted, Russell Westbrook and James Harden, specifically James Harden, would be more open to playing off-ball. I mean, I think a huge contribution to James Harden not playing off ball is because of the system that was built. Whereas if you don't have the ball, you're just chilling, talking to people on the bench pretty much.
Fair enough. And I mean, I went in on Harden pretty good for his lack of off-ball effort. And I guess when you do play like that for two whole years, I mean, that is how they played the first year. They just did it even more the next year because Chris Paul was injured, who missed 50 total games with Houston in 2 years, by the way. Russ has missed 12 in the last three, so at least you would have had Russell Westbrook for games 6 and 7 against the Warriors 2 years ago.
Russell Westbrook got outplayed by a rookie that year. So,
I mean, okay, yeah, we don't need to talk about that, but at the very least, I'm really excited for the opportunity. Guys that like each other are going to play better together. Chris Paul, you weren't going to win a championship with Chris Paul. It was simple facts. That contract signed looked like one of the worst deals in recent NBA memory. Because that
ended up being the worst deal.
Yeah, that fit just doesn't work. It wasn't going to work. Chris Paul is old. You know, like, it is what it is. Now you have a younger guy. There's potential. It's, at the very least, put the Rockets back into a title conversation, whereas before you were kind of like, ooh, well, the Rockets might win some regular season games, but I don't know if I see them getting through this, and whatever. On the whole, I'm optimistic that these two are going to work out together. I'm very, after going through, you know, a lot of effort, time and effort on Basketball Reference and looking at numbers and listening to people bash certain numbers, I am much more confident about this fit. And kind of like we talked about the whole time, because of that personal relationship, I'm excited. I think they can do something special.
Yeah, I mean, at the very least, it's a clear upgrade. I mean, that's something to be optimistic about. I mean, you're running the same roster you had back last year, but instead of hurt Chris Paul, you have a Russell Westbrook who has pretty much been an Iron Man his whole career. So, I mean, that's always a good thing to have a guy that you're paying 30-plus mil to actually be on the court. So, yeah, I mean, I'm optimistic for it. I'm thinking it's going to be more good than bad, but whether that will lead to a championship is still left to be decided for sure.
100%. I guess it's not all sunshine and rainbows. So, I mean, there are things to worry about. Defensively, we've talked about the size the Rockets are lacking, so you got to look to trade deadline or buyout moves later on. Andre Iguodala is still on the Rockets' radar. I really think that they should add him. I think adding him, to me, is a massive championship piece. He's not going to be a huge help for you in the regular season, but he has come playoff time, and you need stoppers. I mean, to have Andre Iguodala and PJ Tucker, it's going to go worlds and bounds if you end up playing a team like the Clippers with Kawhi and Paul George. And even guarding LeBron, I mean, not that... You know, I mean, Iguodala won an MVP for holding LeBron to a triple-double. Like, LeBron's LeBron. Those guys are going to be those guys in the playoffs. But I think adding Iggy gives him another level of championship pedigree. And he's a guy that the Rockets wanted to add 2-3 years ago whenever they were trying to steal him away from the Warriors. But Russ still has glaring holes in his games. That jumper, despite him making a lot of assisted threes, still broken. Free throw percentage has gone from 72% to 65%. That's really not what you want out of your, I guess, 1B point guard. Still a lot of questions, still a lot of moves to potentially be made, but, you know, I'm excited for the Rockets again, and I'm just excited for the NBA in general.
Yeah, I know. I can't wait for the NBA season to start. Rockets didn't look like they're gonna come out of this offseason with a green arrow pointing up, but looks like they managed to do that with this move for Russell Westbrook and retaining three of the four key free agents that they needed to retain. Hopefully they get the fourth one. It's definitely something that I know Big Red is definitely, he's hoping for, he's praying for that.
Something I'm pulling for. But yeah, anyway, I think that wraps it up for me. I mean, I can obviously talk about the Rockets forever. You know, I rambled on about them for, you know, almost 50 minutes.
You're monologuing.
So much for the short episode. But
yeah, that does it for me as well. it's just good to be back, and we're definitely going to get more in depth on the other NBA moves. We just had to kind of break the ice. We get into something that was a little closer to home. So look for some more in-depth stuff about other free agent moves, and I guess this is Average Ant signing off.
Big Red signing off.